Verse 1, Belshazzar the king made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of the 1,000. Let's stop there. Belshazzar, we have a new king now. A new guy is reigning in Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar is old, dead, and gone. There's a new guy on the throne. His name is Belshazzar. Sounds like Daniel's own Babylonian name, which is Belteshazzar. But they're different. Belteshazzar means the Lord has straightened, the Lord of the straightened treasure, which who knows what that means. But Belshazzar means Bel protect the king. That's the name of a Babylonian god. Belshazzar, who is he? He's one of the descendants of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar reigned for 43 years, pretty decent amount of time. He managed to get himself reelected every year. And if you didn't vote for him, he'd throw you into the fiery furnace, you know, or cut you to pieces or something like that. He reigned for 43 years. When he died, for the next 6 years, there was a whole bunch of guys that took turns. And it was pretty dangerous back then to be the king of Babylon because you were a target of the next assassin's plot. And they were all, it was all family stuff. It was just like on one of those TV series, you know, like Dallas or something. But they had the reigning one called Babylon at the time. And so started with Nebuchadnezzar's son, Evil Merodach. Now, you know, he's got to be bad, you know. Evil Merodach, that's his name. And then it's just like one guy after another rose up and killed the other guy and brother-in-laws and sons and uncles and everything, where they were killing each other. Finally, a guy named Nabonidus takes over about 6 years after Nebuchadnezzar dies. Nabonidus is Nebuchadnezzar's son-in-law. So he was married to Neb's daughter. Nebuchadnezzar was his father-in-law. And Nabonidus settles stuff down and rules for 17 years. But one of Nabonidus's favorite hobbies is to go around conquering more kingdoms. And so he's a traveling man, and he likes to be out, and he's never home. And so to make sure that things stay settled, his oldest son gets to sit on the throne in Babylon and run things back at home. And his name was Belshazzar. And so at this time that we're talking about right here, there's actually two kings. Nabonidus is the head king, but his son Belshazzar is the one that's on the throne running things. And it's kind of called a co-regent is what you'd call it. The year is 539 BC. It's almost 70 years since the events of Daniel 1, since Daniel was hauled off to Babylon. It's been now, it's about 23 years since Nebuchadnezzar has died. Does anybody remember how long the Jews were supposed to be in Babylon? 70 years. Oh, and it's almost 70 years. Oh, that's a nifty thing to keep in mind, isn't it? What do you think? Yeah, I think so. That sounds pretty nifty. A couple other things that are important to keep in mind about this whole thing. The city of Babylon is not sitting comfortably at peace right now. They have actually been under siege for a number of years by the Persian army. The Persians are led by a fellow named Cyrus, King Cyrus. And though the siege has been going on for a number of years, the Babylonians actually aren't all that worried. As you can tell, that's why he's throwing a big party. Probably to kind of, you know, put it in the face of Cyrus and his troops out spending the Christmas outside, you know, in their campfires or whatever. The city of Babylon is kind of an interesting place. It was 14 miles square, and it was surrounded by a first batch of outer walls that were 87 feet thick and 350 feet high, with 100 great bronze gates in the walls. 350 feet high. How many stories is that? Like 35 stories? That's how tall the walls around Babylon were. 87 feet thick. The walls were so thick that they could have chariot races on top of the walls. That was one of the favorite extreme sports programs of the day, was having chariot races around the walls of Babylon. There was a system of inner walls and outer walls with a water moat between the walls, making it very secure. The river Euphrates, which is a huge, major river, The River Euphrates ran right through the middle of the city. The city was built on top of the built over the Euphrates River, and they had these big bronze gates that went into the river that kept people from coming in through the river. But they've got this constant water source, this almighty, everlasting water source. So, in the middle of the desert, they don't have to worry about water, and the place is so big. How many? What did I say? 14 square miles. There's miles and miles of farmland within the city walls. So the people in Babylon aren't worried about nothing. Now, actually, at this time, Nabonidus had been out trying to beat the Persians, but every year he gets sacked at the Super Bowl and the guy loses, and so actually the whole rest of the empire is gone. All that's left is the city of Babylon, but they're still not worried because they could just sit there forever. They figured they don't, who cares if they, you know, cut off all the trade? They don't need any trade. They're self-sufficient. They can go on and on and on. So, Belshazzar throws a party and says, you know, we'll show you, Cyrus, you know, who's really in control. Nobody can touch us inside of this. So he throws this great feast and wine for 1,000 of his lords. And while he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels, which his father Nebuchadnezzar, and I'm talking father generically, as it's really his grandfather, but his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple, which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, wives, and his concubines might drink from them. And they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of God, which had been in Jerusalem. And the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of silver and gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. You getting a little uneasy here? You should be getting a little uneasy. I mean, if you know some of those Bible stories, like the first day that they set up the tabernacle in the wilderness, Moses and his buddies, they'd got this Porta worship center. It's like a, you know, a totally mobile thing, you know, it's the coolest of cool. It's the latest in worship technology, you know. And they got this thing all set up, dictated by God. And they get it all set up. And they get everything's anointed and they start the sacrifices and they bring out this first sacrifice. And God shows up. And fire comes down from heaven. Because God shows up. God shows up. God sets the sacrifice on fire. Whew, it's gone. Whoa. Everybody's going, I didn't think this was going to work. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, can you believe this? Whoa. Nadab and Abihu, two of the sons of Aaron, they're kind of like assistant priests or associate priests, I guess we might say. You know, Aaron's the high priest. He's the senior pastor, the senior priest. And these are the junior priests, you know. And they'd been kind of in the back room, you know, playing cards and drinking a little bit or something, you know, just having a good old. They hear all this commotion, and they peek outside, and things are going wild, and they go, whoa, I guess we're supposed to start working or something, you know. And they take some strange incense. They didn't know what they were doing. They rush into the Holy of Holies, and God says, wait a second here. What are you doing? I'm God. You don't act this way in front of God. You don't make stuff up in front of God. And God sent fire. And they had a really good tan that year. They were you could say they got fired up for God. Ashes to ashes and dust to dust. You don't mess with the God of the universe. We see it over and over in the scriptures. Remember the story where the Ark of the Covenant was captured by the Philistines? Remember that? Remember that great story in 1 Samuel chapter 5? Oh, great story. And the Philistines take the Ark back to the God temple of Dagon, the half-man, half-fish God. And they wake up in the morning after this big party the night before, and they wake up and there's the Ark of the Covenant in the temple of Dagon, and Dagon's on his face in front of the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, it's just, you got to be careful when you start messing with God. And you know how That was when they invented Preparation H. They wished they had Preparation H. They got all messed up, those poor Philistines, because they messed with a holy God. And here is Belshazzar. He takes the holy vessels of God, and he and his buddies and their prostitutes and all that stuff, they're going to drink wine, have their party with the God stuff. And you know, gang, this is a great picture. This chapter is not a bad picture for those of us who sometimes mess with the things of God. And we all do this, don't we? We all kind of don't take God seriously when he says, you are holy. God says, your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. And we kind of don't always take it too seriously, you know. 1 Peter 1:15 says, but now you must be holy in everything you do, just as God, who chose you to be his children, is holy. For he himself has said, you must be holy because I am holy. 1 Corinthians 6:19 says, or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought at a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. And so when you see what happens with these guys partying with the vessels of God, with the holy vessels of God, there's a lesson here for us, gang. There's a lesson here for us. God takes this stuff seriously. And God has set you and I apart. He's washed us. He's cleansed us. And he stamped us, that says, with a stamp that says, we're holy now. We're for his use only. So, you know, but Belshazzar, he lives on the wild side. So verse 5, in the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Now, I never saw the movie. You ever see the TV show The Addams Family? You know, Thing? You know, the thing, they just, you know, the hand, the disembodied hand, you know? Well, that's kind of what's happening. This hand appears. Archaeologists have found what they consider to be the throne room of Nebuchadnezzar in his palace. It's a big, huge place. It very likely could be the place where they held this party. And apparently, on the wall behind the throne, it was plastered white. So maybe, you know, the finger, you know, on the wall, maybe it was right there. Maybe it was right there. And this is where that phrase, do you see the handwriting on the wall? This is where it comes from. It's this story right here. And so this finger is writing on the wall. Then the king's countenance changed. He stopped smiling all of a sudden. And his thoughts troubled him so that the joints of his hips were loosened and his knees knocked against each other. His knees are knocking. He's going, blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't know if he's going, I'm nothing but a hound dog. I don't know what he's doing. Maybe he's going, help me, Rhonda, help me. I'm sorry. Well, he's the king. Okay, verse 7. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. The king spoke, saying to the wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Now, you understand here about the third ruler? Because there's two rulers now. There's Nabonidus and his son, Belshazzar. And so he's saying, I'll make you number three. You know, you can be a third ruler with us. Now all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king its interpretation. Then King Belshazzar was greatly troubled. His countenance was changed, and his lords were astonished. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet hall. The queen spoke, saying, O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance change. Now, it's been suggested this probably isn't Belshazzar's wife, because Well, it could have been, but whoever it was, she wasn't at the party. She comes in later. They're thinking that it's more likely it was his mom or maybe even his grandmother, who was Nebuchadnezzar's wife, possibly. She comes in and speaks to Belshazzar, verse 11, and says, "There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy God. And in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge, understanding, interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar, now let Daniel be called, and he will give the interpretation." Daniel's still around. He's got to be in his 80s by now. At least 80s. Maybe 85 or something like that. Something like that. And he's still around. And then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Are you that Daniel who is one of the captives of Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard of you that the Spirit of God is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Now the wise men, the astrologers have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known to me its interpretation, but they could not give the interpretation of the thing." Now, the writing apparently is in Aramaic, because at least that's the way Daniel records it later on. So that means that they should have been able to at least read it. They can read the words. They can make out the words. They just don't understand what it means. They see this combination of words up there, and it's just like, what's that all about? And I have heard of you, verse 16, that you can give interpretations and explain enigmas. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Daniel answered and said to the king, "Let your gifts be for yourself. Give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation." Daniel could probably make some bucks here off of the guy. But that doesn't concern Daniel. Verse 18, "O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, a kingdom and majesty, glory, and honor. And because of the majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him." So who does Daniel see as responsible for Nebuchadnezzar being ruler of the world? Who does Daniel think is responsible for that? God. You see that? He clearly thinks that God was behind it. And actually, Jeremiah would agree with that too. Because remember how in Jeremiah we saw that God is calling Nebuchadnezzar his servant. Now he says, "Whomever he wished, whomever Nebuchadnezzar wished, he executed. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up. And whomever he wished, he put down." That's ultimate power. That's ultimate power. He didn't have a Congress or a parliament to no checks and balances here. Nebuchadnezzar is totally, completely in control. Some have suggested that's why in Daniel 2 he was called the head of gold, because his is the ultimate government. We may not agree with that, and we may not think it's necessarily a safe form of government, but it's sure an easy way of getting things done. Nebuchadnezzar orders it, and it happens, or you're dead. That's real simple, you know. You know, have you ever been a boss in charge of people? This would be good. This would you'd get things done, right? You don't have to worry about politics or making people feel happy, you know, or wondering what kind of mood your employees are in today. You just say, do it or else. You know what? Anyway, so it says, "Whomever he wished, he executed." Okay, verse 20. "But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him." Who took the glory from him? Remember last week? Who do you think the they is? What, Joy? You said it. I could hear you from here. The watchers, the angelic beings we saw back in chapter 4, who were watching the whole thing. They took it from him. Verse 21, then he was driven from the sons of men. His heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven till he knew that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and appoints over it whomever he chooses. And that was what we did last week, this whole study of the humbling of Nebuchadnezzar. This great, great, awesome man, and yet he became like a cow, wandering the field, eating grass, you know, and it said, we kind of think that maybe it was even 7 years that he did this. And some of us suggested that maybe Daniel kind of watched over things to make sure that somebody else didn't come in and try to take the kingdom away while this madman acts like a cow. But verse 22, but you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all this. Now, maybe it's been 23 years since Nebuchadnezzar died. Maybe it's been 30 years since he did the cow thing or something. But really, that doesn't make any difference. Belshazzar knew about it. Probably more than a few people knew about it. At least the people around the throne knew about it. And he said, you knew this. You knew what had happened. And you can bet that because Daniel was involved, you can bet that the people understood why it happened. You know, I don't think they were wondering, well, just did he eat something bad for breakfast, you know, or something, you know. Or is he possessed by an evil spirit or something, or what? Whatever pagan people would come up with in those days. You can bet that Daniel told everybody, folks, it's his pride. God has humbled him because of his pride. God is the king. God is the one who sets people up and puts people down. Verse 23, Daniel says to Belshazzar, and you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. Now, I think it's kind of interesting that Daniel seems to think that Belshazzar is accountable for what he knows. He's watched Nebuchadnezzar be humbled. And I kind of get the feeling that God must think that that was enough. You know, you don't have to go. Some of us like to, you know, I don't care if somebody else learned that lesson. I want to do it myself. You know, I want to. You know, I don't care if you ruin your life by doing drugs. I want to learn myself. You know, that's what, you know, some of us, we almost seem to have that idea that, well, I don't care if somebody else hurt themselves doing this. I want to try it too, you know. And gang, you know what? You can learn from other people's mistakes. You don't have to go through the hard things yourself. Verse 24. And then the fingers of the hand were sent from him, and this writing was written. He's bringing everybody up to speed. He says, verse 25, and this is the inscription that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. Now, these are, these are three different Aramaic words. The word Mene, the word Tekel, and the word Upharsin. The words have meaning. These people understand what these words mean. They don't understand they understand what the word means. They don't understand the interpretation. So, Daniel's going to clear things up. Verse 26, this is the interpretation of each word. Mene, which is an Aramaic word which means to number or to reckon. Like to number something, to count things. You know, we'll sit here and count how many there are of us here tonight. Well, that would be the word that we would use in Aramaic. So, it says, this is the interpretation of each word. Mene. God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. God looked on his calendar and said, buddy, you've got 46 days to rule and reign, and you're at 45. That's, or you're at 46, or whatever, you know. God has counted, and you know what? you're done. You're done. You know, pack up your things and leave the office. You're done, buddy. Then verse 27, tekel, the word tekel, which it's very similar to a Hebrew word. The word for shekel is the Hebrew word, and it means to weigh. A shekel, it actually has to do with a unit of weight. And so the word tekel also means to weigh. And he says, verse 27, tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. You're a little bit of a lightweight here, pal. You're just you don't have what it takes to measure up in God's sight. Verse 28, Perez. Now, if you remember, the original word was upharsin. Upharsin is just another form of the word Perez. So he's talking about here the root word Perez, which means to break in two or to divide. And he says, Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Perez, to divide. Your kingdom has been divided. And it's kind of interesting. It's probably not a coincidence that the word for Persians itself is related to the word Perez. So the root idea of the Persians or the dividers. And guess what? Your kingdom has been divided, and it's going to happen to go to the Persians, who are also, by the way, outside the door, knocking on the door to come in. So verse 29. Then Belshazzar gave the command, and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a chain of gold around his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And I'm sure Dan's going, boy, you know, this isn't going to last for very long. I don't know why you're bothering to do this. Verse 30, that very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain. That was it. That was his final warning. He's done. God had pulled the plug on him. It was that very night, that same night, that the city of Babylon fell. Now, we know now from other accounts, you know, from Cyrus's own accounts and the histories of what happened, what was leading up to that very night. As I mentioned, the Persians had been laying siege to the city. They were surrounding the city. Cyrus had split his army in half. Half of his army was on the north of the city along the side of the river. Half of his army was on the south of the city on next to the river, because the river ran north and south. You know, the Euphrates River runs north and south. And so he's got half of his army on each side of the city. And meanwhile, he has the Army Corps of Engineers working on a huge monster project upstream. There is a dry lake bed that was located upstream to the north. And what Cyrus's engineers were doing, were busy digging out a canal that would connect the Euphrates River to this lake bed. And when they synchronized their watches, you know, and got everything, or synchronized their, you know, their sand timers or something, I don't know, and they gave the signal, and they diverted the huge Euphrates River into this canal, into this lake bed, and everything in Babylon just went, and the water level dropped. Now, what was strange is that they were trying to figure out how they're going to still get into the bronze gates, but lo and behold, the lazy Babylonians forgot to lock them that night. And so the Persian army went in through the gates of the Euphrates River, marched their army in, and basically took over the city without firing a shot. The city surrendered on October 12th, 539 B.C. Look at Isaiah 45. Look at Isaiah 45. This is kind of cool, because this is something written by the prophet Isaiah 100 plus years, 170 years earlier. About 170 years earlier, this was written by the prophet Isaiah, way back in Jerusalem. Isaiah 45, verse 1. Thus says the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have held, to subdue nations before him and loose the armor of kings. Now, That's too bad for the New King James. Old King James and the New American Standard say to loose the loins of the king, not to loose their armor, to loose the loin, as in, you know, the Elvis thing, you know? Okay? To open before him the double doors so that the gates will not be shut. I will go before you and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of bronze and cut the bars of iron. I will give you the treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places, that you may know that I, the Lord, who call you by your name, am the God of Israel. For Jacob, my servant's sake, and Israel, my elect, I have even called you by your name and have named you, though you have not known me. There's another one of those freakiest scriptures in the world. Written 170 years before the event, names the event, names the thing about loosening the loins, which Daniel documents, the gates being open, which history documents, the treasures of darkness, the city of Babylon falls to a fellow named Cyrus, a pagan Persian man whom God named 170 years before he would do this. Is that amazing or what? That's, you know, when we talk about how do I know that the Bible's true? How do I know that the Bible is different from the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita or whatever people come up with as holy scriptures or the Book of Mormon? How do I know it? I'll tell you how it's different. Things like this. The Bible speaks of the future as if it has happened, and then it happens, because God speaks through His Word. God has spoken. That's how I know that I can trust this book, because of things like this. Now, let's read on. So back to Daniel. So the last verse in chapter 5, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. And Darius is the fellow that Cyrus puts in charge of Babylon. That's who Darius is. You know what? I'm only halfway through my notes, and I only got a few minutes left. You know what? I think we'll just stop here, and we'll pick this up. I don't want to skip through chapter 6 too quickly. Daniel in the lion's den. I mean, we can't. That's all the cool stuff is in Daniel in the lion's den. We're going to take a break next week. We will not be having Bible study on Thursday night. So I'm very, very sorry. I apologize to you all. Greg's going to Mexico. We never took all of our vacation this year, so that's part of what we're thinking of, spending some time with our family. And so I'm very, very sorry. But we're going to be taking a break next Thursday. And so you're all going to hate me now. I can tell that you should not have done this. Okay. But we will pick this up in 2 weeks on Thursday night. We'll get back at it. Okay, let's stand and pray.